This is a replay of the Wednesday night, February 25th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings. NLS Sports preempts us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, and the first hour is going to be a pleasure, at least for me anyway, and that's because, once again, we welcome Steve Probst, and we all owe Steve a debt of gratitude, those of us who love obscure R&B oldies and soul, not only because of his love of it as well, but more to the point because of all of his books that are enthralling to those of us who care about this stuff, that are preserving history that I have a feeling, other than Steve's books, in many cases, this would be lost to history. More artists than you can imagine. And one of them is probably little Julian Herrera. So, Steve, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, thanks a lot for the build-up. Now it's up to me, right?
Well, no, I mean, you know, I was thinking about it earlier, and your books are a pleasure to read, but there are so many things that you'll find in them that you're just not going to see anywhere else. And, you know, we always talk about how when we pass, it'll all be gone. And the reality is that a lot of things that were in L.A. R&B vocal groups, 1945 to 1965, would be gone if it weren't for your research.
Well, yeah, and I hope a few people are interested in it, and let's keep that population going and get some more people maybe picking up on it. That's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, you reissued what was the first rock and roll record, and that's such a wonderful book because it can start arguments from here to Kingdom Come, and it can it can be an entire night of fun.
Yeah, and it allowed me to understand that you can't stand Les Paul and Mary Ford records.
Well,
I bet you have one or two in your collection.
Absolutely, I do. And, you know, in many ways, Les Paul was incredibly talented, and not to take anything away from them, but I would just never consider them rock and roll. Therein lies the problem.
Yeah, so. I think you're right. It's sort of a weird mixture of country and word jazz or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we're not here to talk about that.
No, but although it is interesting, yeah, but you know, as I was saying last time, we kind of touched on little Julian Herrera, and to his credit, he doesn't have a Wikipedia page. I loved that, and I think it's absolutely appropriate that he doesn't have a Wikipedia page. But
now somebody's going to change that tonight.
Probably
on what you're saying.
No, you're probably entirely right. Maybe it'll be rejected, but we'll get into the mystery later. But I'll first ask: you've certainly done follow-up research. Did we ever find him?
Nobody I know that has been looking for him has found him, although certain people that are no longer with us claim to have found him, but they're not talking.
That's
but there's one thing for sure. He wants nothing to do with his past fame and lack of fortune and misfortune. He just wants to go on his merry way and not... And go by his given name. And you know what his given name is.
Ron Gregory. And we'll get to that as far as that goes. But
Ronald Wayne Gregory.
Yeah, well, that's right. The middle name Wayne. Doesn't that say it all? But it's interesting. The first time I actually heard of little Julian Herrera, other than the record, which, of course, you know, Lonely, Lonely Nights and all that, was Huggy Boy introducing him saying he's been away a year and a day. And I didn't realize at the time that that was a euphemism for he just got out of jail.
And now he's back to stay.
Right. That's right. Exactly. And I had to ask him, well, what is that? Oh, jail. But now that's interesting, too. So let's back up and say we all thought we knew little Julian Herrera. And it was Johnny Otis who first discovered him, if you will. And I guess it was on Dig Records that those Lonely, Lonely Nights came out in 56. When was it? Was it the first time they discovered he was Ron Gregory? And I should also interject that there used to be a big jock afternoon drive on WoWo in Fort Wayne named Ron Gregory. And every time I'd hear him, I'd think, well, what do you think? No, it turned out it wasn't. But in,
not
obviously.
Him. No.
Yeah.
How he came by the name is of interest.
Yeah.
And I think it was Johnny Otis that told the story. At the time, the big romantic hit of the day, the chart topper, was not Earth Angel. That came about 2 years earlier. It was Heaven in Paradise by Don Julian. Now, Johnny Otis decided he needed a Don Julian type of singer, so he picked out the name Julian to replicate the success or to, feed off the success that Don Julian was having. And so that's how the name Julian came about. I would imagine the surname Herrera was from the family that had taken him in East L.A. I have no better explanation for that, but the name Julian came from Don Julian.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Heaven in Paradise.
Yeah, that is great. But I didn't, Ron Gregory is his name, but it turned out when they looked at his history, he was a Hungarian Jewish guy, I assume born in America, but as far away from East L.A. as you could get.
And from Massachusetts. Yeah. A friend of mine, David Reyes, called me yesterday, of all things, and told me, and he didn't even know we'd be talking about this, but told me a friend of his had sent him a newspaper clipping. Remember Paul Coates' Confidential File?
Yes.
Well, Paul Coates wrote a short column on little Julian Herrera after he had started doing his time, and little Julian drew a blank about who he interviewed. Little Julian, he interviewed little Julian's girlfriend, not the girl that got him in all that trouble, but a different girl. By the way, the name of the girl, I'm not going to give her full name, but her first name was Linda. So when little Julian sang, I remember Linda. He wasn't kidding.
Oh, my God, yes. And, of course, the Linda label, and now we're getting into Eddie.
Eddie Davis.
Yeah, oh, man, and that's a soap opera, to be sure. Some of which you could tell, sadly, because he's been gone now about 25 years.
Oh,
but
great guy, though.
Loved
Eddie.
Absolutely. Yeah, and
him and Billy Cardenas sort of reunited on my show. That was the first time they'd been together since they had a split decades earlier. In fact, it was David Reyes who wrote a book called Land of a Thousand Dances that told me that was he set up them to meet on my show on KLON back in the 80s, and I had no idea they had that bad breakup, but it was Eddie and Billy sort of making nice to each other on my show and talking about how their various labels came about, or how Eddie's labels came about. So, but that, like you say, it's a different story. But man, the East LA story is something else.
Oh, it is, and it's just fascinating how much came out of that, and also so many unsung heroes. Like I think the first record that Eddie Davis actually produced was the Romancers, "My Heart Cries," and I've always wondered, is that true? By the way, you might know if it is or not.
Tell me again. There was a little glitch in my line.
The Romancers, "My Heart Cries."
Oh, the Romancers?
Yeah.
Not sure. Let me change. I think it could have been the Atlantics.
Okay.
But I can't be... Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I'd always heard it was the Romancers. I don't know. But, of course, I loved "My Heart Cries." I had no idea in the beginning that actually it was a cover of a B-side of Etta and Harvey. And what a wonderful song. But, I mean, I remember when that came out, it was just, I don't know, it was just great. And, of course, everything since then. But back to little Julian Herrera. So here he is. He's in the 50s. And, I assumed he was just a guy from East L.A. I had no reason to doubt it. And here comes Huggy Boy. He's been away a year and a day. By the way, he was convicted of rape, not statutory rape. How did he only do a year? I've never understood that.
I think he only did 6 months.
Oh,
I have some of the court transcript. And they didn't come down too hard on him, euphemistically speaking.
Yeah, so to speak.
It was, I think they were trying to put some of the onus on the girl. You know, it's always the case, you know, the girl enticed him, or, and they were all drunk, and he was drinking vodka, et cetera, et cetera. But he didn't do that. I don't think he did that much hard time.
Yeah, because I remember there were like three defendants, and two of them got charged with statutory rape, and he got charged with rape. And I thought, well, rape, that's going to be a long time. And it wasn't.
No, not in 1958 it wasn't.
No. So he came.
It happened. But he had done three records by then. Those Lonely Nights, Symbol of Heaven, which is his second and final one for Johnny Otis's Dig label.
Right.
And then he did the one-off for Art LeBeau, I Remember Linda, which was became a classic and, you know, didn't hurt Art LeBeau's bank account much at all, because those were all big hits.
Oh, absolutely. Hits. Big East L.A. hits, for sure. And, course,
I mean,
Art would put him on stage, too. So, you know, he got the proceeds from the deal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Symbol of Heaven, the flip side, Here in My Arms. Yeah, these were not bad records. They re-released Lonely, Lonely Nights, I think, in, like, 63 or something. So
that was not a reissue. That was he redid it. There was
really?
A band out of Long Beach called The Illusions that performed at the New Pike, and they were called into a session. They had no idea what they were who they were going to be backing. And here's little Julian Herrera in a soundproof booth, and he wasn't at all friendly with the guys, but he was singing, and they were backing him up, and they were promised payment, and they didn't get the payment, and they went to their manager and said, "What gives?" And then the manager ended up in a mental hospital, so that was the end of
well,
that management deal.
I always wondered what Esser Records was, as far as that goes, because that was the label on the reissue. And it looked like, you know, Esser? Can't imagine
SR.
Who that was. Yeah.
SR. And the flip side was I Want to Be With You, which
right.
was an old Earl Curry and the Blenders song
right.
on R&B.
ESSAR, and I had their address, of course, but other than that, I have no idea if any other record ever came out on this label.
Oh, yeah, there was a Surf record. There were several records on SR, like you say, ESSAR. Mm. That was the initials of the owner, Steve, and I forget his last name. He actually put a sort of a talking poem over that over a pre-recorded background and issued it under his name on
okay.
SR.
Okay.
I have it somewhere.
yeah.
Talk about one-of-a-kind records.
To say
anyway,
the least.
Now, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on right now as far as the East L.A. scene is concerned.
All right, well, hang on one minute. Don't go away, because I do want to talk about that. And
okay.
we will get back
All
to
right.
that little Julian Herrera, too, but I'm fascinated to know there still is an East L.A. scene, and that is terrific. But if you're listening to this show, the one thing I know about you is you love radio, or you would have given up a long time ago and listened to something else. And if you do love radio, you should love the C. Crane Company, because years ago, Bob Crane was as disgusted as the rest of us with the quality of reception in the radios that were being made, and he thought I could do better. And boy, did he. And today, it is a company that has a number of radios, all with one commonality. They just have terrific reception. Now, I like the CC Radio 2E. It's my bedside companion because it's got a dial light and a clock and an alarm and a timer and some presets, and that's all good, but that's not the real deal. Here's the deal. You take the CC Radio 2E, you take your average AM radio, you tune to a weak station on your average radio, then tune to the same station on the CC Radio 2E, and it will sell itself, because it will blow it out of the water. And it's designed to receive long range, that twin coil ferrite antenna, but not only AM, FM as well. The idea is to make weak signals stronger. And the 2E also gets weather with weather alert, so that makes it an emergency radio as well. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Take a look at the CC Radio 2E. I think you will be pleased. As I say, that's my bedside companion. John likes the CC Radio 3 because it's got a Bluetooth capability as well, but you can look at them both, actually. But if you can't go online, they've got terrific customer service. Call them, 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, this catalog is not only great products, it's a repository of radio information as well, and I think you're going to like it. You look at that CC Radio 2E, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yep. Johnny Otis and Art LeBeau wrote it, and little Julian Herrera sang it on the Starla label, Don't You Know. And we're talking to Steve Propes, and I've always got links to his pages on Amazon, because, man, these books are just terrific. All right, so we remember Linda. We remember, of course, Julian Herrera, who we'll get back to him, no doubt, because for people who have no idea who he is. And for people who have no idea who he is, we'll kind of have to start at the beginning. But you were enticing me, very successfully, I might add, with the idea of what was happening in East L.A. today. So tell me.
Well, a new book. It's called, it just came out today, in fact. It's called The Dreamy Side. And what the author does, his name is Ruben Molina, who's written a total of 3 books. I don't know if you've run across the name.
Sure.
But what he does is, at the same time, he has an overview of R&B as was popular in the Hispanic community, and combines it with any collector will tell you that now and again they come across a record that's has a placa design, handwritten sort of outsider art,
right,
by guys that are in certain street gangs in East L.A., and they put the information about their affiliation and members of the gang and that sort of thing on the record, on the record sleeve. So what he did is he made it his carry through on an idea to find as many of these records and connect them to as many East L.A. street gangs as possible and put it in a book. So it's illustrated with that kind of art, and it's just fascinating. It's one of a kind, and it documents 2 things at one time. The East L.A. Collector orientation, lots of ballads, and connecting it up to the history of gangs, starting with the Clover Gang, which was the turn of the 20th century. They started up in the early 1900s, so it's a work you won't find anywhere else. And the author, I commend him for this. It was an original idea. I've come across records with, gang-oriented art, drawings on sleeves and on the labels themselves, but he took the extra step to sort of organize it and show what organizations, shall we say, connected with what particular songs.
Okay, so here's the thing. I immediately, while we were talking, said, I'm going to go ahead and order this book. I can't find it. All right.
Yeah, Ruben Molina. You can find him on Facebook. He just got copies today.
Okay.
He got 500 copies, and they're going to go quick.
Yeah, all right. So now I have to look for that, because I know when I tried researching it, it did come up with the Midnighters Facebook page, and it mentioned about how he started the project so that he could better understand our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents' generation and all that. Sounded fascinating, but went there and, of course, couldn't find anything about the book. So Ruben has his own Facebook page, does he?
Okay. Yeah, you'll find it there. It won't be that difficult.
Okay.
Even if I could find it, you can find it.
Right, exactly. And here we are. Understood. Okay, Ruben Molina is at Mr. Rosewood in Norwalk. Oh, very, very good. All right, so I see the book. He says, tomorrow I will be at the doo-wop breakfast at Mr. Rosewood's in Norwalk. Hopefully he didn't sell out. All right, so maybe I can find a way online on Facebook to actually order this book.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Then hold on. Don't go away. We're going to hear the news, and then I'll hopefully come back and tell you I successfully ordered the book. All right. So more with Steve Propes coming up on WGN Radio.
There's been some lonely, lonely nights. cried all night long. The things you used to say to me, I thought that we would never part. Yes, you know I love you. Why did you break my heart? If you would only come back home and let me take you in my arms, yes, you know I'd be happy. I wouldn't be so all alone.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is little Julian Herrera, or Ron Gregory, depending. And we'll get to that, too. But yes, 1956 on Dig. And we're talking to Steve Propes, who just told us all about the dreamy side. And finally, it took until literally seconds ago, I found an address to send him a check for $46, including shipping and handling.
So, yeah, to the United States. It probably costs double that to send it anywhere around the world. But actually, you played Johnny Guitar Watson, Those Lonely, Lonely Nights.
Oh,
that
God.
That was what we heard.
Oh, God, I did. Sorry. Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, well.
Great record.
Yes.
I mean, I never get tired of Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah.
But
you're right. You're absolutely. I just looked. All I was doing was looking for the Lonely Nights. And yes. Oh my God. All right. Well.
Well, it's okay. So it gives us another opportunity to talk about Johnny Guitar Watson, or we can keep talking about Little Julian Herrera.
No,
your choice.
We must talk about Little Julian Herrera because, of course, again, if people have no idea who this is, we're telling this story in bits and pieces. But firstly,
sure.
I will say for the dreamy side, 46. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but if you're into our stuff, it's nothing. And I'll put the address on Raleigh.net after the show, and of course, a link to Steve's wonderful books on Amazon. All right, so now with that in mind, so here's little Julian Herrera, and I guess a kind of Johnny Otis's discovery, which is interesting in and of itself because Johnny Otis was upfront about it, but he was a white guy, a Greek guy, living a life as a black guy, basically. And
yeah,
so,
well, he grew up in a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Identified with the scene that was going on in the Bay Area, and went to Omaha for a short while and ended up in L.A. in the early 1940s when there was all this disruption because Little Tokyo was being evacuated and a black population was forming there, so there was all sorts of activity going on in the black community, and Johnny Otis sort of made his mark as a band leader, and nobody bothered to wonder what his ethnic background was at the time.
And nor did it matter. I mean, after all, the music is colorless, so that's terrific. But yes, and of course, we could do months on Johnny Otis and not run out of material. But so how?
Oh, great.
How did
great
you,
guy.
Yeah.
You know, he started a label called Dig This Record.
Uh-huh.
He put out 4 45s on it, called the Squires, who were basically Don and Dewey, called them the Blue Jays, and covered hits of the day because he saw Topps Records and Broadway Records was making a fortune covering hits of the day with unknown artists, so he decided to jump on that bandwagon. And when that petered out, he just took the name Dig This Record and took off this record, and, well, you know, presto, we got Dig Records.
Yeah.
And then it ties into the magazine. And I think he licensed the logo to Dig Magazine, not the other way around. Man, that's a long sentence.
No, but that's also terrific as far as that goes. So here again, we've got Johnny Otis, who by the time little Julian Herrera, who, like you say, I guess he was a runaway who wound up being taken in by a family in Boyle Heights. And
his mother died when he was really young. He told Paul Coates a few things about his story. You know, Paul Coates was very anti-rock and roll. He was sort of he had Confidential File, which is sort of based on the idea of Confidential magazine.
Right.
He tried to find a scandal under every rock. And he booked Johnny Otis one time on his show so he could tear rock and roll apart. And he gave Johnny Otis a script and said, this is what your conversation will be. And Johnny Otis said later with that and didn't do the show.
Yeah, exactly. Why would he? So
kidding. So that's the Paul Coates meets Johnny Otis story. But Paul Coates did this story on Little Julian Herrera. He had a girlfriend. When his mother died, his father took him in. She had a new wife. The new wife none of them got along, so he left the new wife, said to Little Julian, you're coming with me, and then promptly disappeared. What a way to bring up a family, huh?
Yeah, and he was, 11 years old or something? Very young.
Something like that. He got arrested when he was 19. He had just, I think he was three records into his career, and that was the end of it. You know, Huggy Boy told me he booked Little Julian Herrera on that he's been away for a year and a day, and 3,000 people showed up. He booked Little Anthony, and about 150 people showed up. So that shows.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, here's Little Julian Herrera, and he was a local legend. Again, wouldn't have meant anything outside, probably, of East L.A. and a few other simpatico places. But, you know, he was a king. Now, I find it fascinating how we discovered he was Ron Gregory.
How did we discover that?
The cop showed up. With his picture, looking for him. And, Ronald Wayne Gregory. He's like, no, that's not Ronald Wayne Gregory. That's Little Julian Herrera.
Right. One and the same. But Ronald Wayne Gregory doesn't quite have the selling panache that Little Julian Herrera does on the typical R&B label. So,
beyond question there. But here he was, and we know he went away, he comes back year and a day and all that stuff, but do we have any idea why he disappeared for good?
Well, I think after his final record?
Yeah.
He had a record on the MO label, EMMO,
right.
Which is a big sought-after record. Very few people have that. And that recently went for some pretty convincing bucks. Why he disappeared from the recording scene, I think.
Not only the recording scene, from the planet. I mean, all we have about what happened to this guy is rumor. I don't know anybody who actually knows for sure what happened to this guy.
Yeah, the rumors include ending up in Tijuana.
Right.
People in San Diego claim to have run across him, but those rumors didn't pan out, that he lives in Southgate. This friend of mine I told you who passed away, his name was Steve, mm-hmm. how's that, said he ran into him at a Midnighter show, and Little Julian didn't want to talk about his singing career. He would... he'd exchange words with Steve, but any talk about how he got to be who he was off limits. So I think it was just maybe he recorded for the wrong people who didn't really treat him well. I mean, Art LeBeau based a lot of his catalog on that one record, but he never recorded. I think there was one other song recorded in Art LeBeau's files, it was never an unissued track, and to this day, I don't know, what the disposition of that, because, Art LeBeau, closed up, fenced off, and original sound records,
right.
And kept all the stock. All the stock was inside the building in West Hollywood.
Right.
And they hired guards and put fences around the building so people wouldn't break in. And then some people figured out how to, bribe the guards. And a lot of stuff was, including Art LeBeau's divorce decree from Starla.
Oh, that's great.
So a lot of water under that bridge.
Oh, sure. But, you know, the difference is that we know all about Art LaBeau, start to finish. And we really all know about Huggy Boy as well, maybe a more interesting story, but we know all about him. But here's little Julian Herrera, and we find out when the cop shows up at Johnny Otis's house saying, you know this guy? You know this Ron Gregory? No, but he's, you know, Julian Herrera. And then he just flat out disappears.
Yeah. He was arrested on January 27th, 1958.
Mm-hmm.
And went on trial right away in February. It was pretty much taken care of. And, okay, after he recorded with the Illusions, that was the rock and roll band that backed him on the remake of Lonely, Lonely Nights.
Okay.
He didn't, I guess, he did some live performances by, through, what's his name? Oh, God. The guy that discovered Ritchie Valens had the silhouette.
Oh, Bob Keane?
No. The musician. Why can't I think of his name? Because he's really a very helpful guy. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. It's that time of night.
Yeah.
But he appeared with... he appeared on some live performances at small clubs, but didn't really, you know, they weren't really advertised.
Right.
Who knows? Who knows?
And of course, I understand that musically from the standpoint of it's not too long after we're talking about this that here's the Beatles, and musically things are changing dramatically, and, you know, Carole becomes almost all Beatles all the time and all this stuff. So I can see why we'd have a discussion saying, you know, that was it for his career. But we're not talking about his career. He disappeared. You know, it's like he was taken to Neptune. We never heard of him dying. We don't know what happened.
Oh, by the way, the person that he appeared with was Gil Roca.
Oh, yeah, right.
R-O-C-H-A.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gil Roca had the band, the Silhouettes, that Ritchie Valens sang with. And he, you know, it was Bob Keane's operative that saw Ritchie in a show in the San Fernando Valley and invited him to the label. And Gil Roca was, you know, cut off at that. But Gil Roca continued on with his band, and little Julian sang with him from time to time.
Right.
Gil self told me that.
Yeah, and I assume Gil's no longer with us, but he had been in Lancaster for years and almost had a shrine to Ritchie Valens at his house and all that. And yeah, he would talk about, you know, Julian Herrera, but again, we're talking about the earlier days.
You're right. Who he performed with, I guess he just didn't perform.
Yeah.
You know, he just, maybe he found religion, maybe he, you know.
Well, if I had to guess, he was murdered. That's
okay.
I swear to God. I mean, that would explain it, especially since he supposedly went to Tijuana and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, to completely disappear without a trace, he'd be in his early 80s by now if he were alive. You know, I don't know what happened to the family in Boyle Heights, but I'm sure that they were interviewed and they know nothing and on and on. And yeah,
okay, I'll tell you one little tidbit.
Yeah.
You know the musician Ry Cooder?
Sure.
He did a CD called Chavez Ravine.
Ooh,
he
yes.
hired an operative to try to find little Julian Herrera to sing on a track on Chavez Ravine. And that operative, I don't know if she found little Julian, but he didn't appear on the... That would have been a big deal if little Julian Herrera had performed a song on Chavez Ravine.
Because
that was a best-selling CD, and it didn't happen. So there's another little, you know.
Well, and that album is not that old, I don't think.
Oh, no, it was in the 90s, I think, or the 2000s.
Yeah, I think it was 2005 it came out.
Okay.
But if I'm right, and I could be, hell, I'm not even playing little Julian Herrera, so what do you expect? Actually,
you know, take your pick, you know. There's certainly not enough Julian Herrera music to satisfy either one of us, but we have what we have. I mean, there's not enough Ritchie Valens music. A lot of people you could say that about. And certain people there's too much music.
Well, yes, isn't that the damn truth? 100% in agreement there too. I was so thrilled when Little Willie G started singing again. In fact, I thought about him because he was on Chavez Ravine on some stuff. But it was years that he was gone, and I know there's an Eddie Davis tie into that too.
Well, yeah, maybe Little Willie has a idea about Little Julian, since now that you mentioned he was on that CD, maybe he knows a little backstory about, how far Ry Cooter got in the process of locating Little Julian.
Yeah,
these are still questions I guess we can ask people that are,
and if he doesn't,
crowd, as it were.
Yeah, deal is, if he doesn't, that gives more credence to my thought. He was murdered. So
okay.
That's where I'm going with this. All right, hang on a moment. We've got Steve Probst, and I've been hugging him all night. If you do have a question, we've only got a few minutes left, but this is the man who knows everything about everything when it comes to soul and R&B and all the stuff you ask me, and I'm a piker compared to Steve. So 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. And we will hear Lonely, Lonely Nights, actually by Little Julian Herrera, I hope, coming up on WGN Radio.
These lonely nights, lonely nights, can go on since you've been gone. Oh, I've been wrong so long. Please bear me these lonely nights. These lonely nights, lonely nights, made me know I love you so. Please hold my hand. These lonely
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, that's the 1956 version on Dig. I believe that's Dig 118. And we might get to SR after the news as far as that goes. But I've been hogging Steve, and I'll tell you, the one person I know who knows damn near as much is Stan in Dearborn. So, Steve, you will hopefully hear, assuming that I don't screw up the phones entirely, meet Stan in Dearborn. So let's see if we can do this. Can I do this? All right. So if I do that and do this, I can welcome Stan to WGN Radio. Are you there, Stan? Stan? No. Don't tell me I've lost. Steve, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I don't know where Stan went.
I didn't see him either.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And he had a question for you, too. And I'm sure it was a really good question. And I don't know. I don't know why. Well, all right. I don't usually do this, but let me try and actually change phone banks and have you on the same one together and hope there's not a ton of feedback, but we'll find out in a moment. So, Stan, are you with us?
Yes. Hello,
right.
Raleigh.
And Steve, are you still with us?
Right here.
All right. Go for it.
Okay, hi, Steve. I'm a collector mostly of East R&B and Midwest, and that. I'm pretty weak on the West Coast, but one of my favorite West Coast artists, Arthur Lee May, and the Crowns. And I heard at one time they backed up Mel Williams as the J.O.'s on Otis, and they had a couple records on Otis.
The J.O.'s did an album with Johnny Otis. That was another one where they covered a lot of hits of the day, At My Front Door and songs like that. The J.O.'s had one single on the Dig label called Tough Enough. Look for that on lists. If you can find that, you'll really be pleased with what the group came up with. Arthur Lee May was buddies with Richard Berry. They were good. They were very close friends. Arthur Lee May was a professional baseball player too, as I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, I got a chance to meet him in New Jersey.
Very nice guy.
Yeah, and I had his baseball card. And
very nice guy. They recorded a song called Gloria, which has nothing to do with the Cadillacs or the Charles Brown song. It was for Gloria Jones, who is a member of the Blossoms. They were very high on Gloria, so they did a song about her. It was credited to Arthur, but Richard Berry sang the bass on that. So that's. I don't know if you have that, but that's one to look out for.
Yes.
The one I can't find, Bartholomew May, is on the Flip label. The same label Richard Berry did Louie Louie on. Just cannot. That's a hard to find record. Speaking of Bartholomew May, I did a Tony Valdez show on Channel 11 in L.A., and he was looking for an original R&B singer because it was, I guess, Black History Month, and I contacted Bartholomew May, and we did a TV interview with Tony Valdez, who's I talk about East LA historian. Tony knew it all. He worked at a record store before he became a reporter for Channel 11 in LA. Boy, this goes all over the territory, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid you pretty much ended the hour. So Steve will join us next quarter. Usually he joins us quarterly. So, Stan, I'll have to warn you in advance so that you can call, because I think you'll have a swell conversation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for the information.
Absolutely.
Good show.
All right, thanks. And hopefully Stan's not hanging up entirely, because I've got you both tied into the same line, and you'll both be going at once. In any event, Steve, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. I'll get those links on Raleigh.net, and I really appreciate it. Thanks for all you do.
Let me know what you think of the book. Okay, thank you, Raleigh.
All right, sounds great. Goodbye. Yes, and I will get that book, too. So there, going to send a check to Post Office Box 6074 tonight. All right, whatever's on your mind will be on What's Up Next, coming right here on WGN Radio.
These lonely nights, lonely nights, can go on since you've been gone.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. All right, so it's the 1963 version on ESSER, Little Julian Herrera, Lonely, Lonely Nights. So now you heard from 1955, we played those Lonely, Lonely Nights, which was Johnny Guitar Watson, and Little Julian Herrera from 1956 on Dig doing Lonely, Lonely Nights, and also, as you just heard, 1963 on ESSER doing it. All right, more than you ever wanted to know about Little Julian Herrera, no doubt, but it really was the mystery. I probably didn't unfold that as well as I could have. It's one of the problems when you know all about a topic, you don't realize that no one else has ever heard of this guy. But it really was. He was like the biggest thing in East LA, and then came the rape, and he goes away and comes back and is, sold out at Huggy Boy and all that. And then around 1963, after he did the ESSER recording, just dies, I guess. Well, you see, that's my theory. No one's ever found him. And it's one of those mysteries to this day. No one knows. So wherever you are, Little Julian Herrera, whose real name was Ron Gregory, as Johnny Otis found out when the cops showed up, no one knows what happened to him. And I'll always wonder, but I think he's gone. Something happened in Mexico. That's my take on it. All right, so we'll get to data breaches here in a moment because, they're always in the news. And I'm always telling you that one of the worst guardians of your information is the medical industry. And so it is. I've got a story about that. And also, much like Little Julian Herrera, I realized that I haven't fully explained the magic twanger. And I know Lisa had called a while ago, and I, you know, mentioned Froggy and all that, which meant nothing to her, which I'm not surprised. But Amanda wrote an email last night, and you know, she said, "I found your magic twanger," and she actually found one of the clips from Smilin' Ed. But we'll go over that, and I'll explain it completely. And of course, if you're long enough of tooth, you'll remember Smilin' Ed. Yeah, the Buster Brown Show. All right, all that and more coming up. But Jack is in St. Charles. Welcome to WGN Radio. Jack, are you with us?
Well, yes, I am.
All right, Jack.
Like
what's
to make
up?
A couple of requests.
Of course you do. What do you want to hear?
A couple of songs by Wolf Harris.
Oh, other than Timey Kangaroo Downsport?
No, that was the other one.
Okay. Well, what's the first one?
Sun Arise.
Oh, okay. All right. We will do it.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Yeah. Somewhat of a persona non grata because he too wound up being in the news for untoward events, sexually speaking. I forget exactly what the details were. He was Australia, but it was something. And a lot of people said, "We'll never play another Rolf Harris record." I said, "That's not the only reason you shouldn't." But Jack wants to hear him, so we will, in fact, do that. So that's the. He's gone. He's been gone about 3 years now, but absolutely, you know, Timey Kangaroo Down Sport and all that can stuff. But yeah, there was an event and an untoward event, and suddenly he was. Literally considered persona non grata. He was arrested in England. I think it was, you know, Operation something or other, you know, where they were questioning a number of people, I think about 12 of them, regarding historical allegations of sexual offenses. And they were not linked to, but it was around the same time as Jimmy Savile, who died in 2011. Harris denied any wrongdoing. He was bailed without charge. He didn't comment publicly. He denied everything strongly. But the bottom line is that was bad enough. Then comes 2013. He's arrested once again by the same group of officers, charged with 9 counts of indecent assault dating back to the 1980s, involving girls who were underage, I think 14 to 16, and 4 counts of alleging production of child images. And that's the stupid part, by the way. You don't take pictures. All right. Anyway, they concluded that it was in the public interest for Mr. Harris to be charged. And he was for nine counts as far as that. And, of course, you know, his lawyer said he wasn't guilty and he was, you know, bailed out again. And then they gave him 3 more charges, further assault. The new charges were against females age 19. Now, I don't know exactly what those charges were, but that was 19 in 1984 and age 7 or 8 in 1968 and 69 and 14 in 1975. Oh, yeah. And he pled not guilty to everything. And so that was the deal. And a trial. You might remember that. That's about a decade ago now. And I think there were a number of charges, including that he was involved with one of his daughter's friends and when she was 13 and all that, and he denied it and all that stuff. And so there was, interestingly, he had written a letter to the 13-year-old's father later on, after the end of the relationship was shown in court. Yeah, "I fondly imagined that everything that had taken place had progressed from a feeling of love and friendship. There was no rape, no physical forcing, brutality, or beating that took place." No, but she was 13. All right. And then there was Australian girls. And all. So it was on and on. Everything started coming out. And accurate or not, it was just bad. So he wound up, I think there was a conviction. He was found guilty of all, well, I know there was a conviction, guilty of all 12. But in terms of what happened, there were some sentences and some were going to run consecutively and some would be served outside of prison and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know ultimately what happened in terms of that, but it came up again and again. It was just the, you know, the situation that would not stop. It's been on and on and on. 2015, 2016, 2017. There was another trial in 2017. And there was a documentary And the bottom line is, through all this, a number of stations said, we'll never play another Rolf Harris record. Yeah, guilty or not guilty. And as I say, I could see lots of reasons for not playing Rolf Harris records, but on the face of it alone, you don't need the rest of that stuff. But so that is the deal. He died. He was 93 years old in 2023. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. And yes, I guess we'll get into the story of the Magic Twanger next, in case you've always been wondering. And no, I didn't change the batteries. I should have. All that and more coming up right here, hopefully with you too, on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Nicolette Larson, 1978. Yeah, was in the top 10 of Billboard in early 79 and got to number one on the Easy Listening chart. And I think it was the number 10 adult contemporary record of the year in 79. And actually, it was Neil Young who wrote that. And she and he had a relationship, and he actually thought that she should do it. And she did. And so that's the deal. Sadly, she's been gone quite a while. Died, I think, 1997, and that was sad. But it was interesting. It was produced by Ted Templeman, who was a house producer for Warner Brothers, and of course, you know, whether it's the Doobie Brothers or Van Halen. I mean, there was a lot of clout behind that record. So that was the deal. In fact, she had heard Neil do it and said, "What a beautiful song!" And he said, "It's yours." And so that's when she said, "I'm going to make my own version of that." And that's a medley of her hit. So 888-876-5593-8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E. All right, so here is the deal about the Magic Twanger. Yeah, it's sort of like Julian Herrera in that I tell you part of the story and not all of it. Well, you get all of it now. All right. There used to be a kiddie show host, and actually this show started on the radio and then was on television, and we're talking late 40s, early 50s, and Smilin' Ed, a guy named Ed McConnell, but all you knew was Smilin' Ed's gang. And later in the run of this show, after Smilin' Ed was no longer doing it, Andy's gang, Andy Devine, when Smilin' Ed died. But it was a kiddie show host, and like a lot of kiddie show hosts and a lot of kiddie shows at the time, probably as appealing to adults, to say the least. And so here was the deal. On the show, and you'd have to see Smilin' Ed. I mean, Andy Devine, probably the right replacement for him, but this is guy most likely to be a TV host of any type, as far as I'm concerned. And so one of his characters was Froggy. And Froggy was a cartoon character, actually. He was a cartoon gremlin, something between a gremlin and a frog. And he was a troublemaker. And the deal with Froggy is he disrespected any authority figure, didn't matter who it was. And so the deal was that Froggy would appear when Smilin' Ed said, "Plunk your magic twanger, Froggy." And that was his cue. And on the radio, it would be followed by a raspberry sound. And then here would be on TV, it was a puff of smoke. And then here's the gremlin. And the voice of the gremlin, I just loved him, Arch Presby. And he later was a pretty big voiceover guy in L.A. for NBC and stuff like that. This is all an L.A. show. And but after the smoke would clear, here's Archie as Froggy. Hiya, hiya. That's where I got hiya, hiya from. And the deal was, and it happened right after, like I say, here would be Smiling Ed, plunk your magic twanger, Froggy. All right, so that was the deal. And so here was Froggy. Froggy, you know, appeared on top of like a Big Ben clock, an armoire of sorts. And he would sit there and play practical jokes on the guests. And the guests were presenters you might have one guy there on how to demonstrate painting a wall. And she said, and now I'm going to take this can. And then Froggy would chime in and dump it over my head. And then the confused guests would, of course, do that. And so that was the deal. And Arch was not only Froggy, he was also the announcer for the show. But I found, because Amanda actually found a clip on YouTube, I saw, but there's more. And I found this compilation of Froggy in action, in case you haven't heard him. And this is why I just loved kiddie shows.
Plunk your magic twanger, Froggy!
Hiya, kids, hiya, hiya.
Today, I wish to lecture on the raising of honeybees, just as I raise them at my country estate.
At the North Pole?
Yes, children, I have a lovely estate at the North Pole, and the bees just love the cold weather. No!
When I hear that the president was coming to the Bar B, I made for the bunkhouse to get my best duds ready, and I put on...
Hair ribbons,
yeah, and I tied the bow so careful like on my braids.
Put on your lipstick.
Yeah, put on my lipstick real careful like, so if I got to kiss him, I could pucker up real good. No! You breathed your last words.
I was talking about your daughter. I was.
My daughter? I ain't got no daughter. You keep your mouth shut.
The reason he selected me is because I'm...
such a big boob.
You're right, lad. You're absolutely right. I'm the biggest boob on the whole farce. No! You better hold your tongue or you'll end up...
behind the chocolate bar.
That's right, behind the chocolate bar, and I'll throw the key away. What do you mean? You're trying to make a fool out of me?
It's too late.
It's too late? You're darn right it's too late. I was a big fool long before I met you.
That's right.
You bet that's right. And don't you ever forget it.
Hello there! Look what I got here, huh? Today, kiddies, I'm going to tell you the story of Goldilocks.
And the Three Stooges.
And the Three Stooges. The Three Bears!
The Teddy Bears?
Certainly Teddy Bears. No, leave me alone!
Oh, you horrible creature!
You're a horrible teacher.
I am not. I'm a horrible lecturer. Oh, what am I saying?
Now, partners, when the president arrived, I took him all around the ranch. And I ended up at the cowboy quarters. Then I said to the president, I said...
You're full of bunk.
Yes, I said, Mr. President, you're full of bunk. Why, you're the biggest blowhard I ever did see. Why, you're so full of bunk. I never did say you was full of bunk.
I meant the bunkhouse. I did.
Bunkhouse? Oh, I see. Well, don't you worry. I know every crook in the city.
And you're the biggest one.
You bet your life, I am. And believe me, if I ever see me on the street corner, I'll see that I get life. I tell you. What are you doing back here?
Wait for a street car.
Oh, you nasty thing. Now, children, after the comb is filled, it looks like this. Then you remove the case from the comb.
And comb your hair.
And you comb your hair. And then you look neat and clean.
Jack Horner.
You get the
sat idea. Sat in the corner, eating a Christmas pie. He stuck in his thumb, pulled out a plum, and said,
"Put the rest in your eye."
All right, so that's the deal. So from plunk your magic twanger, Froggy, and then Froggy would appear. See, this is my magic twanger, and then you appear. You're the caller. So that's where it comes from. And it was just terrific. As far as that goes. And originally, like I say, it was the Buster Brown gang because Buster Brown Shoes sponsored it. But then it was Smilin' Ed. And then when he died, it was Andy Devine. And I don't know how long that show lasted, but it was hilarious. So that's the deal on Plunk Your Magic Twanger. All right. So 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, we'll talk more after the news, hopefully to you on WGN Radio. And I'm Raleigh James, and I don't have a bumper. Well, I was trying to have a bumper, but I seem to have lost it. So, I was trying to fulfill the Katerina Valente request, but I'm not sure what happened to that file, so you'll hear it next. All right. Sorry about that. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh takes us to Stan in Dearborn, who has called back. How wonderful. All right, Stan, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. I've got a story about the magic twanger for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid watching that, but it was relived again on TV for us. We had a guy named the Ghoul would show movies.
Uh-huh.
And in between the movies, he'd always have stints with Froggy, and this guy was dressed up like supposed to be a ghoul, I guess. And he was funnier than anything, and some of the skits he'd have with Froggy.
Uh-huh.
Some of Froggy would do something to him, and he had a wand, it looked like an antenna from a car, like a car antenna.
Yeah.
So he'd flip it, and Froggy would come back, and he'd blow up Froggy with firecrackers, and Froggy would get back to him the next segment. And then finally, he'd kind of flush him down the porcelain receptacle.
Yeah, no, I know exactly who this is, actually. This is Ron Swead. And,
yeah, right, Ron Swead, yeah.
He was a very big fan of Ernie Anderson when Ernie Anderson was the great Goulardi in Cleveland television. And then Anderson moved to L.A., of course, became a huge voiceover guy. And so here's Swede, and the show was, it was out of, like you say, KBD TV Channel 50 in Detroit, but it was also seen in Cleveland, amazingly.
Yeah.
And he'd wear that lab coat and the goggles,
right,
and all that, and had prank calls when you used to be able to make them, and all that, the boom booms blowing up the viewers, and yeah, all that. So, absolutely. So this originally, like I say, in Cleveland, but it became a massive hit in Detroit.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and it brought back the magic twanger. So anytime when you were saying the magic twanger, I knew exactly what you were saying, and I kind of related it.
Well, right, cool. Right. And now you know where it came from.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah,
exactly.
He was Ron Swede was much better looking, and I know what he looked like, so don't get me wrong. But if you'd see Smilin' Ed, it's like, how could this even be on television?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and Ron Swede, the Ghoul, would always talk about Lima, Ohio. I think it was.
Yep.
Lima.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and he was originally from Euclid, outside of Cleveland, and
mm-hmm.
Grew up there, and he grew up with the great Goulardi and all that kind of stuff. So but he was into that horror stuff from the beginning. There was a Frankenstein thing, a local thing. It was an afternoon matinee, a Dr. Slinky of some sort that he would be. And then, the Goulardi thing. And he went to L.A.
We had a kind of series of that in Detroit, too.
Oh, yeah.
He was the tops. He was the best.
Yeah.
And on another note, I heard you with Steve tonight, and I got in about 11:15,
mm-hmm.
And I heard you guys talking, and I just let you go because it was very interesting. I didn't want to call to interrupt.
Oh, no, well, you should have. Well, I said to John, I said, I don't know. I probably know too much about that. Here I am talking about this as if anybody's ever heard of little Julian Herrera. But I swear, murder is the only thing I can figure. No one has seen this guy.
Well, I didn't know that that was re-released in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, on ESSR, you know, or SR, as Steve says. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's ESSAR. I figured it was, you know, Raza spelt backwards or something. So
yeah.
Yeah. So,
and,
absolutely.
And another in that group, the Tigers, was Ray Estrada, mm-hmm. who was also... responsible for Memories of El Monte.
Right, along with
the Peglins.
With you know, what's his name, Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And that was exactly where the first time I heard it, when Huggy Boy brought him on stage. Been away, year and a day, he's back to stay. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Probably it means he was in jail. All right, well, what for?
Yeah.
And I still don't know how you can be convicted of rape, not statutory rape, rape, and get 6 months.
Yeah. We used to have that record, Jailbait, by Andre Williams.
Oh, don't you love that?
By that?
Oh, man, I'll tell you. And that Fortune Records is one of my favorite labels. And, yeah, talk about wonderful labels out of Detroit. And all that Andre Williams stuff was just wonderful. I'll have to play Jailbait. Haven't played that in a while.
Well, Steve and I were talking about Arthur Lee May, and I looked at my, you know, after he left the show, I looked at in my catalog here, and I pulled out the Arthur Lee May on flip.
Really?
It's Hey Pretty Girl, and the flip side is 'Cause You're Mine Alone.
This may be worth some deluxe bucks.
So that's on flip. That's the flip release.
No, absolutely. Flip, our Richard Berry label, of course.
Because I used to pick up a lot of flip. I liked all the stuff that was on flip when I saw it.
Uh-huh.
In auctions or on, you know, set sales on, you know, magazines, and when I picked it up at record shows and record conventions.
Oh, absolutely! No, there were wonderful things on flip. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said that's the hard one to get by Arthur Lee May. You know, I had the pleasure of meeting him in New Jersey at one of the United Group Harmony Association shows.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And. I was also, you know, a baseball fan, and I was always anti-Yankee, so when Milwaukee beat the Yankees in 1957, Arthur Lee May was on that team for a period.
Right.
And I told him, you know, have your baseball card, and it's got all your, you know, minor league at Evansville and other places he was at. And I told him there was a picture of you, and it said you had another profession, a picture of you singing in a microphone. He started laughing. He said, yeah, I remember that card.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The tip-top card, yeah.
I love Going to Get Me a Girl by you know, Arthur Lee May and the Crowns. That was my favorite.
Yeah. But, so many different labels that he was on also.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, Specialty and RPM and Cash, Flip.
Yeah, well, Flip was interesting. That was a husband and wife deal, the Fur Tags. And I don't know, Max and Lillian, their publishing company was Limax, which was, you know, for Max and Lillian, or in that case, Lillian and Max. But they were around, and they had some interesting things as far as that goes. I thought Donald Woods, remember Death of an Angel? Oh,
yes.
Man. And that record, for whatever reason, I got banned in places. It's leading to suicide. I'm like, only if you have to hear it twice, you know?
Yeah, the back of that, I remember something about Utopia, back from Utopia or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Something like that. I've got a couple of them by them.
And the 16s were on flip, Casual Look and all that.
Oh, yeah. This was good. I was looking here at this 45, and Hey Pretty Girl is written by Richard Berry.
Well, yes, that guy wrote a ton of stuff, and that's how...
And the other side, 'Cause You're Mine Alone.
Yeah, he wound up, of course, for many, many years, losing all the rights to Louie Louie, because basically he sold it for $10, you know, I mean, that was the thing.
Yeah, wow.
He was a lot like Jesse Belvin, where he didn't understand that these have value, these songs, and so, fortunately, before he died, he got some royalties back, and that was sort of nice.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you why, I used to listen to old radio stations, or I'm, you know... faraway stations when I was younger. You know, you listen to WOWO.
Right, WOWO in Fort Wayne, and sadly they don't have that signal anymore. Yeah, on the world's famous fire escape. They don't have that signal anymore. which it breaks my heart.
Yeah, that was really good signal.
Yeah.
And WBZ. And
right. Juicy Brucey Bradley.
Yeah, WLS. And
right.
WLEC.
Sure. Of course.
And I was going to tell you, you know, on the record, the Jimmy Soul record, the label that it's on, SPQR.
Right, right. That's a Norfolk record. That's Frank Wieda's label.
Frank Wieda?
Yes.
Okay, now, I heard a couple different stories of what that SPQR means.
Oh, it's you know what it means. Did you ever take any Latin?
Oh, yeah.
Well, so you know, Senatatus Populus Romanus. You know, I mean, that's what it was.
Okay, now, I was listening one night, and this is back when the record was out.
Yeah.
In 1963, WLAC, and there was somebody there from Randy's Record Mart.
Okay, sure. Randy's Record
and
Shop,
he said,
by the way.
He said, I just talked to the owner of this Jimmy Soul record. He said, you know, you get this and five others for $5, send them in. You know, they're really pushing us. So I guess it was a sales pitch, but he says, you know, that owner was on a tour with in London with American Stars, and they were doing a tour, and there was an extra show added to the itinerary, and it said, it was going to be at the Royal York Opera House or whatever that was, you know, kind of like Carnegie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they had the spotlights were there and, you know, the night lights, the Hollywood spotlights, everything. And Frank Wieda came down and he said, what is this on a marquee, this big in red letters, red and gold, everything was red and gold, SPQR. And one of the attendants said, you know, they all had all the placards and the lobby cards were all SPQR, SPQR. And he said, what is this? And the attendee says, well, this is a special performance at the Queen's request. And he says, this is where he got his name from.
That's so funny. Well,
and he said the label is in red and gold. That's the royal family's colors. And they wanted to put a lion with a heart
right.
on its tail, but that was a... They couldn't do that because it was a trademark for the royal family on their crest or something.
Oh,
so they put this other animal up there that kind of looked like, looks like an ox or whatever it is.
Would not surprise me.
and then, I always thought that's what it was. And then years later I read it on one of the, you know, RPM or something, somebody came out with Jimmy Soul's album, an oldies album, and it had the story out there about Frank Wieda.
Frank Wieda was an interesting guy. He actually was an immigrant. I think he was born in Italy, and his family immigrated when he was young, and he grew up, I think, in the Bronx. And he went into the army, and I don't know what happened there as far as that goes. But when he came out, he was real big. He was a singer, you know, of sorts, and he loved performing at the Calypso clubs. And in Harlem. And so they moved to Norfolk and they opened a record store and jazz club, Frankie's Birdland, for Frank Wieda and all that. But the first record, and you'll remember this record, this is what made him money the first time, was he came up with High School USA. Tommy Fassenda, because they did it for every market. And they mentioned all the high schools. And so... then he started Le Grand, and that's where he put Gary U.S. Bonds, Gary Anderson, who he renamed U.S. Bonds, and with New Orleans and all that that stuff. You know, unfortunately, he loved to overmodulate things. That's another thing. But the Gary U.S. Bonds stuff was pretty good as far as that goes. And then, of course, the Jimmy Soul. There was one song, Twistin' Matilda and the Channel.
Oh, that's
my favorite. A friend of mine, actually chief engineer in Miami, who is a record collector as well, called me and said, what is this about the Channel? And I said, well, I think I know, but why don't you call Frank Wieda? And he said, I can do that. I said, here's the phone number. And so he called him, and he found out that the reason it said the Channel is because part of that musical riff was taken from a Calypso song, The Channel. So the deal was he had to have it on there. So that was Twistin' Matilda and The Channel. And so that's why I was there.
Was it the Channel Eclipso dance?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. You know, I don't know that much about it, but I do know that that's when he got the rights to do it, he had to put it in the title. And, yeah, but it was funny because I think he was so glad to be talking to somebody. This is probably the 90s, which still, you know, that's late in the game. He was so glad somebody remembered him. He sent the guy, like, copies of all of his records. I'm like, damn, I should have made the call. But
well, he was kind of like a talent scout, wasn't he? He sent these... He would see these guys performing or these groups performing. He would direct them to certain producers or records. Labels.
Yeah, he was a fairly small town guy. Originally, he had like a little TV show and stuff like that. But the record labels, especially LeGrand and SPQR, were the big deal. And then He was very big on the local Italian American community, and he used to be at the city council meetings, just outspoken as hell. I wish there were tapes of that. So,
I heard he discovered Timmy Wilson and the Tiny Tim and the Hits, who later became the Diplomats, and directed them to Roulette for the Wedding Bells by Tiny Tim and the Hits.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, they were out of Maryland, and then I heard a story too that he discovered the Royal Charms, and sent them to Excello.
Okay.
To be the Gladiolas.
Yeah, there you go.
And of course, then they became Maurice Williams and the Zodiac.
Right, and they were South Carolina based, and And yeah, that Excello had the tie into WLAC as well, because Excello was earned by Ernie Young, and that was Ernie's Record Mart. It was Randy's Record Shop in Gallatin, and Ernie's Record Mart in...
Ernie's Record Mart, yeah. Okay.
That was in downtown Nashville, but in fact, I used to go to Randy's Record Shop. Last record I bought there was Spider Jivin' by Andy Fairweather Lowe in 1975. So,
it was still there then, huh?
It was. Well, you know, the appliances were gone. It started out as an appliance store that had a little record rack. And the guy who owned it started Dot Records, of course. But
Randy Wood, yeah.
Yeah, Randy Wood. Randy Wood was the guy who, one of the sponsors, as you know, WLAC, Randy's Record Shop, and you had Ernie's Record Mart, and then, of course, White Rose Petroleum Jelly, 101 uses, and you know what that one is for. And, you know, I swear, I heard that growing up. I had no idea what that one was for. But my favorite was the Reich Poultry Farms Red Top Baby Chicks. 100% guaranteed to be alive at time of delivery at this price. Sex could not be guaranteed. And I always wondered, I've been like 12, who wants to have sex with a chicken? You know, so anyway, but they kept saying, sex cannot be guaranteed. Like, well, who wants to do that? Yeah, so anyway, but those were the deals. But Randy made so much money from those mail order packages. And those packages were priceless because, of course, there would be one record you know, and then you'd get 11 others you'd never heard of, and invariably there'd be something in that 11 that was just priceless, you know, so it was worth it. But, you know, here he is selling appliances and making money on the side with these records, and he looks at WLAC and he says, you know, these people will not play R&B during the day. You know, I mean, after all, LAC is owned by the Life and Casualty Insurance Company, and we can't play that in the day, and, you know, that kind of thing. kind of like WSM, they couldn't play country in the day. So, same deal. But that's when he got the idea, man, if I can't play that stuff in the day, I'm going to find me somebody to cover it. And he found Pat Boone at Belmont College. And a lot of people said, you know, that he was a racist or whatever. Hell no, there wouldn't have been a WLAC without his support. But he knew damn well that he needed white covers back then, sorry to say. And he did well with it. Did very well with it. So, yeah.
And did he put out an Oldies 45 label or something like that?
Was that him?
I read that. One of those Oldies, I can't remember if it was Eric or Oldies 45 or...
I don't think it was Eric. Really?
One of those reissue ones in the early 60s.
I'll be darned. All right.
And I think that's what I've heard. And I remember on Dot Records, one of my favorite groups from Indianapolis. I was going to ask you, when you were in Indianapolis, did they praise and revere the Counts?
They should have, but no.
Yeah, they should have.
Yeah, they should have. So he had Ranwood, of course, you know, I think that went to Lawrence Welk. But anyway, he had a deal with Lawrence Welk, and there was like a publishing deal. But I don't know. He sold Dot to Paramount. And that was in the 50s. And then ABC acquired it. And then after Dot, he started Ranwood with Lawrence Welk. Okay. It says, different person. Note, a different person, Randy Wood, was associated with VJ and Surrey Records. Okay?
Oh, okay.
So we might not, I don't know. I'm going to have to see if I can find him in some way with that. So I thought Ranwood was probably the last, but... Yeah.
Well, it was something that I heard, and you know, I can't confirm it. I don't know for sure.
Well, of course, now you're joggling my mind, and what I'm going to have to do, because I'll go crazy if I don't, is go back and think about all those reissue labels. I want to know who owned them all. You know, who owned, like Eric, who owned it?
Yeah.
Now I want to know. Okay.
Well, like Steve was saying that on Dig, the Arthur Lee May stuff on Dig were you know, remakes of other songs that were out. And I've got a couple of those, yeah.
Yeah, but Dig wasn't a remake label. Okay, Eric was owned by...
I know that, but...
Was owned by Bill Buster. It started in 1968 in Philadelphia. Bill Buster. Eric Records.
Okay.
All right.
68.
Yep.
That late, wow.
Yeah, 68 to 74. Then it moved to New Jersey, 74 to 95. Currently still exists in San Leandro, California. Well, lovely. All right, so we put Eric to bed. Now, Oldies 45. Who owned that? I want to know. Okay, expiring minds want to know. I'll be up all night, you know, Stan, so thank you for that. But, who owned? I'm curious. I never really thought about this before. And, Okay, we got our Randy Wood connection. Wrong Randy Wood. It was a sub-label of VJ.
VJ?
Yeah, Oldies 45 was a subsidiary of VJ. So that
makes sense. A lot of VJ artists were on it. That's right.
Right, and that's where Randy Wood bought it, but it's not the same Randy Wood.
Oh.
Okay, so it's a different guy, same name.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad we had this conversation.
Well, yeah.
All right. Always wonderful to hear from you. Thanks, Stan.
Okay. Nice talking to you, Ollie. Right. Have a great show.
You too. Okay. Thanks. Appreciate that. 888-876-5593. We got another hour of this coming up, and I promise not to be long-winded because we have Marty, we have Rita, we have Chris, Cleveland, Dennis, and Cindy. All right. One line available for you if you want it on WGN Radio.
Ways a sambinha, feito numa nota só. Outras notas vão entrar, mas a base uma só. Esta outra consequência, do que acabo de dizer. Como eu sou a consequência inevitável de você. Quanta gente existe por aí que fala, tá, não diz nada, ou quase nada. Já me utilizei de toda a escala, no final não sobrou nada, não dei nada. E voltei pra minha nota, como volto pra você. Vou contar com minha nota, como gosto de você. E quem quer todas as notas, ré, mi, fa, sol, lá, si, dó. Fica sempre sem nenhuma, fique numa nota só. Bum 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 b
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, it was Paul in Watsiga who said, I want to hear some Caterina Valente. I said, all right, yeah, fantastica. Let's do a samba de una nota so, and or one note samba for the rest of us. And so there you have it. I'd love to tell you the year, but I don't know. I have it on an old... I have it on an old 8-track. Yeah, one that I made myself. So I don't know. But I'm sure it's on compilations now, but I have no idea where I got it. But obviously it had to be old. It was on the 8-track. All right, so 888-876-5593. Marty is in Whiting. So, Marty, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello, Raleigh.
What's up?
Hey, Dirk. Got that. Can I get the phone number for that AM radio that you talk about?
Ah, AM and FM. The Sea Crane Company? Sea Crane Company. You can't go online?
The one you got in your bedroom.
Okay, yeah, that's the it's AM and FM. That's the 2E. I would say if you can go online, I'd rather you do that, and that's ccradio.com. But if you can...
Raleigh, let me interrupt you. I don't have a smartphone or a computer.
Okay, then 800... Mm-hmm.
522-8863.
8863? Okay. And 8863? Yeah, and that spells tune. So 522-TUNE,
T-U-N-E. 522?
Yep.
8633?
Yep.
Because
that's it.
This afternoon, when I say I live in Whiting, I'm like 20 miles from Gary, Indiana. They got a blues channel. Sometimes it comes in, Raleigh. Sometimes it doesn't. Today, I could not get that darn station for the life of me. And then, but also on the flip side, in Valparaiso, 40 miles away, 3,000 watts, small wattage, obviously. I got the classic rock channel, but yeah, the blues channel today. So you know what? I need to write the phone number down.
Yeah, 522-8863. So now
okay,
you know.
next question real quick.
Yeah.
I missed it the other night. What was the answer for give me a second here. Psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
A married couple.
Tension.
You need one thing to make a happy marriage.
Tension. And it was Carl.
Tension?
Yep, tension. It was Carl Jung who said, "Is a conversation likely to be interesting if you know beforehand that your partner will agree with everything you say? Mentally, morally, and physically, nature has created extreme differences between man and woman so that he find his opposite in her and she in him. This creates tension."
You know what? Probably the other night, though, when I talked to him,
yeah,
I might because I'm a smart aleck. My answer was going to be humor. But yeah, probably a call previous, but yes.
Well, my favorite,
yeah,
my favorite answer was, since it was one element, was Billy Bob saying helium.
The other night I heard that.
Yeah.
Helium. Yeah. You even laughed out loud.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was hilarious. I just see it, and it was so appropriate. So, yeah, kudos to Billy Bob for that.
Okay, and I wrote that down also. But get this, young lady, because you're not that much older than me.
Okay.
And you mentioned last week you lived in Bedford, Indiana.
Yes.
I used to go to school in Bedford, Indiana.
Really?
No, Raleigh, no lie. I told when we first met over the phone, the airways. Long story short, I'm a retired construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
There in Bedford, Indiana, heading south, and I cannot tell you is it Highway 20? If you're going towards Bedford,
well, Highway 50. That's going east and west. Like,
okay,
yeah. Because the house I lived in was on East 50.
So long story short, though, being a retired union construction worker from the Laborers Union,
uh-huh,
we had our school there in Bedford, Indiana. I'm not exaggerating. We had a school. December 1986, my first time going there, and it's like, are you kidding me? And And Raleigh, at one time, lived in Bedford.
Well, long before the 80s, yes, absolutely. And but I'll tell you, Buck Lemon Furniture was probably still on the square when you were there. So they were very good friends of mine, June and Buck Lemon.
When did you move away from Bedford then? High school or
No, I was much older than that. I was actually, here was the deal. I was working in Louisville. So this was 1976. And the Lemons actually had a house on East 50. And they said, well, it's about an hour commute, but if you want to live in it. And so I said, great. And so I commuted on Highway 50 down to 65 and go down that way. So I'd always have to go through Seymour and all that. That was when I mentioned the A&W Drive in there. But that house was funny because it had an indoor pool in the true sense of the word. I mean, it was in the living room. The problem was that I didn't bother to put water in it. Well, you know what happened one night. And they also had some wonderful freezers, but this was before they had frost-free. And I'll never forget it because I put a bottle of root beer in one of them. And a few months later, I opened the door and all I could see was ice and my bottle of root beer sticking out from it. I remember the indoor pool. The other thing is it was all wool carpets. I have no idea what possessed them, but all wool carpets. And but it was a big house and I was by myself. And I remember I put... I didn't have much money for drapes at the time, so I just put sheets on the wall. And I remember Bucky. Bucky came over and took one look at it and said, are you Patty Hearst's hideout or something? And so, you know, and I kind of laugh about that because it was, you know, on the outside, this is a really deluxe house, and here I am living in it like it's a slum. But it was free and convenient.
Mm-hmm. Well, last week, your caller brought up John Mellencamp, and you mentioned about Mellencamp, and you ran across him way back in the day. Johnny Cougar.
Right, back in the day. Johnny Cougar, and he'd been in high school, and then he was he'd be at that A&W Drive and fairly regularly cruising that. And, that was before he ever had any hits or anything like that. And little Johnny Mellencamp made good for himself.
And I got to tell you a story real quick. Make it quick. But I played rugby off and on for 20-some years for Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And IU, the college, they came to Fort Wayne to play us in rugby.
Right.
It's like, Marty, you got a labor union school in Bedford? 20 miles from us. Next time you come back, hook us up. And so one night, round up New Year's Eve, got 19, oh my gosh. We're going way back, Raleigh. But 1990, 1901, and I drove, I was visiting a driver this one night. We drove by Mellencamp's property because, Bertie, John Mellencamp was there. It's like a fortress.
Wasn't he up at the lake by then, Lake Monroe?
Well, it was one of his properties.
Yeah. I remembered he moved up to Lake Monroe. Yeah. The high dollar seats, yes.
Yeah. And that night, I'll never forget this as long as I live, Raleigh. But, yeah, so we went to party, you know, and I had to maintain my alcohol drinking because I'm the DD. But anyways, Marty, that's where Mellencamp, he lives. And we drove to French Lick.
Oh, right, sure.
Because I'm a Sodex fan, so.
Sure. Yeah, but no, he was Johnny was from Seymour, and of course you turn off I-65 right there at Seymour, and I'd always stop. So yeah, he did well for himself.
Oh yeah, all right, Derek. Hey, I'm gonna let you go. And but hey, nice talking to you again.
Always, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh, and let's see what. Yeah, and I was mentioning the other day there, everybody's gone. Even Bucky's dead. Jeez, I tell you what. All right, too old for my own good. 888-876-5593. Rita is in Harwood Heights. What's happening, Rita?
Hello.
Hey, Rita.
Hi.
What's going on?
Oh, a couple things. I've been having a lot of fatigue lately, horrible fatigue.
Oh.
And on Monday, I went to see my internist.
Yeah.
Tuesday, I went to the dentist.
Okay.
And then today I went to the oncologist.
All right.
So they found out that I'm really very, very anemic. But it was funny. I go to the Jewel a lot and uh-huh. to get their soup.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in my car in the Jewel parking lot, and I was eating my soup, and then I got kind of tired, and I was reading my paper, and apparently I fell asleep.
Okay.
Well, somebody in the parking lot thought I was dead.
I love it. I love it.
So they, all of a sudden, I get this knock on the window by two cops.
That's hilarious.
And I said, no, I'm okay. I'm just tired, you know.
That's so funny.
But, yeah, there was... But then today I was reading I bought a Sun Times,
mm-hmm.
and I was reading it, and it gave this big splash about all the people from WGN that are being let go.
Television.
That's television?
It's television. And it's not just Chicago. If you were in Los Angeles, you'd be hearing about all the people from KTLA. And actually, it's not anything brand new, but this time it was people who you would know, people in front of the camera rather than behind the camera. But yeah, it's you know, your basic business reorganizations for, which makes all the sense in the world in many ways, too. Because remember, these are for-profit companies, so you want them to do what they have to do to adapt to whatever's going on at the time and like that. So they're streamlining it. And I couldn't tell you more than that. I don't have any inside insight to this, but that's what's going on.
Okay.
And it's happening at all the next star stations. Some people have surmised online. I've seen, well, it's all because of the Tegna merger, which may or may not happen because that requires FCC approval. But I don't think it's as simple as just that. I think that the landscape, you know, really, for many years now, has been changing so rapidly with the advent of digital and start to finish that, you know, staying competitive and staying alive means refining your game repeatedly. You know, mm-hmm. advertising isn't sold the same way anymore. I mean, nothing is how it was. And so mm-hmm. to be relevant, you have to be, you know, primed for what is happening in the marketplace currently. So I think mm-hmm. you'll see all sorts of changes. And you probably see that in virtually every business, but it's usually not front and center like a TV anchor that you would know.
Yeah, they didn't specify if it. I don't have a TV. So I just listen to the radio all the time.
Well,
read newspapers, but they didn't specify in the paper that it was, you know, it was around the country type of thing.
Oh, right, because if you were in Los Angeles, they own KTLA, and you would be hearing it right now, KTLA, because that's local to them. So here it'd be GN, and in other markets where they own stations, that would be going on as well. And again, why it made news now, I think, is because there are people in front of the camera. You know, if they had 8 layoffs in a day of people who were behind the scenes, you wouldn't know it. So it's just familiar faces. And as I say, I'm not familiar with the situation in terms of who and why and what, so I'm not going to speculate. But what I will say is mm-hmm. that in 2026, if you want to stay alive, you better be continually reinventing yourself because the game is continually changing.
Now, you said that you have two studios.
Yeah, exactly. For this, I've got two studios, and then I've got three radio stations. But that's
in different buildings.
But the two aren't related. I do this show myself, which I don't associate this show with the radio station. So they're my studios just for me. And yeah, I have one in the Phoenix area and one in Globe, where I own the stations. So. And because we go back and forth a lot, remember John had a hemorrhagic stroke 3 years ago, and that comes with a lot of physical therapy. And so
mm-hmm.
consequently, yeah, and so you don't want to drive, you know, it's 100 miles one way. You don't want to mm-hmm. keep making that trip every day, 200 miles a day. So I had to have a place that was in the valley, you know, closer to where, you know, Mayo and Scottsdale and all that are. So that's like I'm sitting right now there and here. And that's the deal. But yeah, two separate studios.
Okay. Yeah. Well, are you anywhere near that where that woman was abducted?
Okay, you're talking about Nancy Guthrie. No, that's Tucson. All right. Well, if you were looking at a map and you looked at Phoenix, and if you went due west close to 100 miles, you would come to Globe. Now, from Globe, if you went due south about 100 miles, you'd come to Tucson. So that forms a triangle, you know, Phoenix to Tucson and then to Globe. So, you know, we're within 100 miles, sure. But and, you know, it's certainly captured the news everywhere. And I think the likelihood of that woman being alive is slim and none, assuming that they told the truth when she was taken. Because when she was taken, they said, you know, she's on medication and she will not survive more than 24 hours. Well, obviously she could survive more than 24 hours, but more than 2.5 weeks, well, now you're getting into a dicey area, assuming they were telling the truth. You know, and rumors have been just rampant about that. You know, at first they were trying to blame, like, well, maybe it's a son-in-law or something. Well, you know, it doesn't seem to be anything having to do with the Guthrie family. And so, you know, they found some DNA evidence. I know that it's only been on the news probably to the degree it has nationwide because Savannah is on television. She's a, you know, U.S. whatever it is, Today Show host. So people know who she is. But supposedly they put out a $1 million reward for either her recovery, you know, either her remains or if she was alive, that. But, you know, we'll see. I don't know. It's a terribly sad situation. But I think that if Savannah wasn't a national television personality, you know, you wouldn't know about this.
No, we've had too many people who disappear.
Right.
And aren't found.
Everything. And you know, I think the working premise now is that it was a part of a robbery gone bad. I don't know. I absolutely do not know, but I do know. I always look for my nuts on YouTube so I can go to sleep. I look for people who are interesting enough that I don't, my mind doesn't wander back to things that matter. And also, you know, on the other hand, boring enough that I won't get engrossed in the topic, and then I'll fall asleep, usually in 10 minutes. And there was one of them, Alison Dubois, the woman who the TV show The Medium was bought, she did a Finding Nancy Guthrie, and it was 40 minutes. I think I heard about three before I fell asleep, but I might go listen to it again.
Well, I was wondering, could I make a request?
I don't see why not. What is it?
You know, I never hear anybody request anything from B.J. Thomas.
Oh, probably for good reason. All right, what is it you want to hear?
I don't know.
All right.
A couple years ago, when I first started to listen to you, I knew some of his songs, but I can't remember them now.
All right, so I should...
I just know that there was something there that was nice. It was good.
Well,
good
there's thing. A lot. There's a lot of them. He's probably known mostly for Raindrops Keep Falling Out of My Heads, but there's many, many, many B.J. Thomas records because he was singing for a long time.
But he's dead now, isn't he?
As far as I know, but I don't swear to it. But last time I saw him was actually at an airport in Jacksonville, and that was 1978. So what do I know? But John says say goodbye. It's time for the news. All right, I'll find something by B.J. Thomas, and I'll find out when he died or if he's still alive. That too. So keep listening. Don't go away.
Okay.
All right. There it is.
Thanks a lot.
You betcha. We'll pick it up after the news on WGN Radio.
Together, you waltz right in the door, just like you've done before, and wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again, just when I'm about to make it work without you. You look into my eyes and lie those pretty lies, and pretty soon I'm wondering how I came to doubt you. Smile, that smile, and there go all my defenses. Leave it up to you, and in a little while, you're messing up my mind and filling up my senses. Here you come again, looking better than a body has a right to, and shaking me up so that all I really know. Here you come again, and here I go. All
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that is B.J. Thomas, and that song was somewhat of a soap opera. Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil wrote it, and they were giving it to Brenda Lee in 1975, thinking it would be a great comeback for her, and she passed. She just wasn't interested in doing it. So it languished, and then B.J. Thomas's producer decided to put it on an album in 1977, entitled B.J. Thomas. All right, and so it was on there, and it turns out that Dolly Parton's producer at the time, Gary Klein, heard that album, the B.J. Thomas album, and said to Dolly, you got to do this. And, you know, most of the stuff that Dolly Parton does, she wrote herself, but obviously she didn't write that. Man and Will did. And so she liked it, but she said, you know, it needs a steel guitar. I'm not doing it if we can't get a steel guitar in there because it's got to be country. And so they did. Al Perkins plays steels on. But that's the deal as far as B.J. Thomas. Most of us really got to know him when he was on Scepter, but he had done a lot of things before that, actually, and some country stuff like on Hickory and all that. But the hits started really coming on Scepter. And then, you know, that album had a lot of interesting things on it as far as that goes. But I think trying to think what would be the first thing that was a real big hit for him. I'm not looking at the charts. I'm Hooked on a Feeling probably in 68. Maybe Eyes of a New York Woman. I know that came out right after it. And then, of course, 69 Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, the obvious stuff, but did a number of other things as well. And like I say, in 77, long after the Scepter contract was over, there was that B.J. Thomas album, and there was Here You Come Again. So I hope Rita liked it. All right, so 888-876-5593. Oh, I should tell you, yes, he died. I did check that. B.J. Thomas absolutely died in Arlington, suburb of Dallas, 2021. So rest in peace, B.J. All right, so Chris from Greenwood, I promised we'd get to him earlier, and boy, by golly, we're going to do that right now. So, all right, Chris, whatever's on your mind, the floor is yours. Chris, I hear you. Are you sleeping? Chris? Yep, little snores. Okay, well, sleep well, Chris. I'm so sorry. We tried. All right, so, oh, man, I put him to sleep. Oh, well. And he hadn't been holding on that long. Well, maybe he had. Who knows? Cleveland Dennis and Elgin, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Reinventing myself, maybe.
All right.
I, so little time and so much to tell you.
All right.
Because you guys were talking, you know, I have one of your folks' books from the 80s,
yeah,
and I always liked that guy, and I happen to catch him most of the time that he's on with you, but, you know, you're talking about that East L.A. scene and all that,
yeah.
And you mentioned Arthur Lee May.
Yeah.
I got his baseball card, Raleigh.
Right.
I got his, by, like, 1957-58 Milwaukee Braves at the time.
Uh-huh.
But just wanted to mention that. I'm going to make a request that maybe we play Twist and Matilda. You guys were talking about
that. Oh,
and
the channel. Yes, Twist and Matilda, yeah. And the channel. All right, sure. Let me get out the request list and go for that.
Somebody mentioned Ry Cooder. I heard a Ry Cooder song recently.
Ah.
You'll Have to Go. It's a remake, I guess.
Yeah.
You'll Have to Go, the old country.
Yeah.
You know,
put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does a very unique rendition.
Okay.
So I'd like to make that request, but I really want to talk about Cleveland and Goulardi.
Okay.
The guy from Dearborn, I think it was.
Right, we're talking about the ghoul who followed him. And in fact, it's interesting when the ghoul, who of course was a Goulardi fan growing up, he called Goulardi, who of course by then was doing voiceover at ABC, and said, you know, we could bring this to life again. We could redo that. And he said, good luck, kid. You're welcome to it. So,
well, you know, really, it's still going on right here in Chicago with Swingooly, because
Jerry G, this
jockey from Cleveland, brought it to Chicago in the late 60s,
right.
Early 70s.
Yeah, Jerry G. Bishop, of course. Uh-huh.
Right, and they got it going, and Swingooly, you know, he still plays today. My one son-in-law's brother worked for him for a while. They hooked me up with the T-shirt, the rubber chicken, the whole bit.
Okay.
Anyhow, yeah, I just think it's a great show tonight. I think I kind of covered it all. But you guys end up, we all end up talking about a lot of different stuff. Makes it a great show, Rolly. I love it. That's all I got.
Well, good to hear from you. Thank you. All right, so I don't think it's Jerry G. Obviously not anymore. I think it's Rich Kaz, who's Sven Gulli, son of Sven Gulli, I think. I don't know. And so that's been around since the 70s, to say the least. I still say some of those horror shows across the country for those local guys who invariably were like the sports guy or the weather guy that they just, you know, suited up for the horror show. They're just hilarious, and I wish there was... More capture of that in terms of on some form of recording. Nobody's going to keep the 2-inch tapes, but, you know, and many of them didn't even record them. But, yeah, you got a guy in Miami, M.T. Graves. Yeah, I remember him. Charlie Baxter, I think he really was. So in any event, let's see what Robert in LaGrange has to say for his bad self. All right, Robert.
Yeah, Raleigh, I recall one of the first TV kid shows that I recall was the Pinky Lee show. He reminded me of the old vaudeville guys. I was wondering if you had any more information on him.
Well, he certainly was the right age for that. He was born like in the aughts, as they say, like 1905, 1907, whatever. He was from St. Paul originally. And yes, he was vaudeville originally. And I think his name was Pincus Leff, which is his real name, actually. So, yeah, Pincus Leff. And he was hired to be a dancer in Bodrick and Felsen, which was a vaudeville dancing act. And so he was a tap dancer. And he got mentioned in advertisements and reviews, and he was part of the act, you know, on tour on the vaudeville circuit, which would go through the Midwest and the East. And then he left it, decided he was going to be a stage and film star. So he became a comic. Yeah. And they said he was of the baggy pants variety, slapstick and things like that. And there was a show that went around. It was called Speed Show, which was something that would like be the opening show for a front run film, you know, first run film. And so Pinky Leff was what he was. And then when vaudeville died out, that's when he changed his name from Pinky Leff to Pinky Lee and started doing burlesque, you know, the rapid fire jokes before the strippers. And then he made his way into radio and did that. And then motion picture debut actually was for Educational Pictures. Are you ready for that? And I think it was Dental Follies. And so I'm pretty sure it was. I don't know. Wow. I could be wrong. But after that, that's when the signature suit, you know, the plaid suit and the checkered pants and all that. And you made me so mad. Yeah. And so he was, you know, right of the perfect age to be at the start of television, like in 1947. And so he had like a 30-minute variety show, the Pinky Lee Show, and that was on NBC. There's got to be some Kinneys or something of that. And, he did the Pinky Lee show in the 50s, sponsored by Tootsie Roll. And, that's the show that spawned Pee-wee's Playhouse. And right after the Pinky Lee Show came, of course, Howdy Doody. And
that was a big one.
Absolutely. It was in like 1955, he damn near died on screen. He collapsed on camera. He was sick.
I remember he had a heart attack or something.
And they thought it was a bit. And it turned out that it wasn't a bit. And so that was pretty much the end of his show. He died of a heart attack later, not immediately, but, you know, prompted by that incident. He was performing at a dinner theater, I think. But, yeah, that was you know, the rumors were that he was institutionalized because he went insane. No, he didn't go insane. He had a heart attack. That's a much better story. It just happens not to be true. That was it. He hosted something, the Gumby Show, which was
Gumby.
A clay animation thing, and so that's it. And I'm sure those movies are still around. And he was actually well settled personally. I think his wife was Bibi, and I don't think he ever had another wife, and had three or four kids. And you know, and he later had he died in Mission Viejo, and he was older actually at that time. But you know, that was long after his career was over. Mission Viejo is part of you know, Orange County.
Yeah.
And so he was a teacher for a while and some regional productions. But the big thing when it started, yeah, vaudeville, and then that burlesque, that opening act for burlesque was big for him.
Right.
So that's all I know. I don't know a lot.
Yeah, and just one more quick thing. There was a group in the 50s, too, that used to do the 20s and 30s songs, I think. They were called Something Smith and the Redheads.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever heard of a group like that.
Yes. I don't think there's any hits.
No, I know. They did like, It's a Sin to Tell a Lie and things like that. But they didn't last too long.
Something Smith. Yeah. And that was it, Something Smith and the Redheads. Yeah. And I guess It's a Sin to Tell a Lie is probably the only thing they had. And that was a top 10 record
probably,
in 55. Yeah. They also did, and we played this, but not by them, but we played A Shanty in an Old Shanty Town, you know, that thing. They did one of those. They were students at UCLA and got a contract with Epic, you know, Columbia's redheaded stepchild. Yeah. So Something Smith and the Redhead. So I don't know if I have that or not.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah, it wasn't really a request, but I remembered it.
I only remembered because it was on Epic. But
And I remember, it's funny how as we get older, we remember some of the things from our early childhood.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The long-term memory gets stronger. Yeah.
Well, isn't that the truth? Yeah, we have no idea what we ate for lunch today, but we know what we did 37 years ago. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. Yep,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, okay.
Good to talk to you.
Okay, Raleigh.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593. We got Stacy in Algonquin and Cindy in Chicago and Victor in Silver Spring. Oh, AM 1050. Changing formats again? I think so, on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. We only got a few minutes left, so we'll forego the bumper. We'll find out what Stacy in Algonquin wants to hear. So, Stacy, what is it?
Hi, Raleigh.
Yeah.
Did you ever play my song?
I have not. You are on the list, and I was planning to play something tomorrow night. I was actually looking for Something Different by Lou Rawls, and I will find it before tomorrow night.
Oh no, that's great. That's great.
You will hear them, I promise.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Raleigh.
You betcha. All right, so a lot of them. So some stuff winds up, like I see Cindy's there, and we still haven't played her Daniel Boone record, but we will. Now, meantime, Victor is in Silver Spring. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Hello, Victor. Has Victor given up? Have you left me at last? All right, well, whatever. All right, AM 1050, changing formats. Well, I think, I don't know if that was an LMA or not, and Hubbard, Bonneville had sold it to Hubbard. That was an interesting little radio station, historically speaking. It was Ed Winton, the guy who later had WOCN in Miami, The Ocean is in Motion. Yeah, it's a long story. He put that on, and then Connie Begay bought it. And when he put it on, the callers were WGAY, and people thought it stood for Connie Begay, but Connie Begay didn't buy it till like 4 years later. I think it stood for the Gay and Beautiful Music or whatever, something like that. But anyhow, it went through a lot of different incarnations, to say the least. And then Bonneville had sold it and to Hubbard, you know, in that deal a few years ago, and it was doing Spanish, and I think they abruptly left the air saying, you know, we don't have any money or something like that. And right now I think they've been simulcasting the gamut. But I don't know. I haven't looked it up. I'll have to do that now. Is Cindy still with us? Cindy, are you with us? All right, Cindy. Don't tell me Cindy's asleep too. Oh, no. Oh, this is some kind of a record, I think. Yeah. Oh, well. All right. Well, that's the way it is. And actually, I should have played a bumper. I've got 4 minutes to kill. Not that I have trouble talking. God knows. There was actually something. Oh, I know. I wanted to find you a 2020 news because we put those on the stream when we don't have time to get to them on the air. But I have some people who have emailed saying, put them on the air. Well, I will when I can. All right. So let's see what the deal is there. And we also have so many wonderful stories, as usual, from Bob, Engineer Bob, who sends me marvelous stuff. And, little political tidbits. We talked about the presidents yesterday. Did you know that one family has served continuously in Congress since 1933? So who would that be? Would it be Bush's? Would it be Kennedy's? No, it's the Dingles. That's right. Served southeastern Michigan for 90 years and counting. Yeah, talk about a political dynasty. That's pretty good. Oh, look at this. James on the south side is checking in. We'll leave the Dingles back in Michigan and talk to James. Welcome back to WGN Radio. How you doing, James?
Fine. I had finally found something that at least was what we would call, I sent you two stories. I actually tried to detail them a little bit.
You did.
One was about a Burger King franchisee being sued over child labor.
Oh, my God. Where was that?
Okay. I think that was Michigan, if I recall correctly.
Okay. All right.
And then there's the other one about the guy who got at a hotel called the New Yorker.
Okay.
And then he thought that he would take advantage of what they said. Oh, you kids are free to stay and to try to become, let's put it this way. He thought he could somehow obtain ownership.
You're right. He was living rent-free. And then he tried to say that he owned the damn thing. Well, he got convicted, I believe. He pled guilty to a fraud charge.
Yeah, so, I think he figured they gave him an inch, he would take a mile.
Well, there was some obscure law, and Manhattan has some of the weirdest tenant laws. Poor landlords, I tell you what, that allowed him to live rent free for years. And Mickey Barreto, he admitted he forged property records in an effort to take ownership. All right, and that on paper was partially successful. All right. According to his telling, he and his boyfriend paid $200 in 2018 to rent one of more than 1,000 rooms in the towering Art Deco Hotel. He then requested a lease, claiming his one-night stay entitled him protections under a city housing law that applies to single-room occupants of building constructed before 1969. The hotel rebuffed him, so he took his case to housing court. The hotel failed to send a lawyer. Not good. So he was awarded possession of the room. And then he went a step further, defrauding the state, uploading a fake deed to a city website that he purported to transfer ownership to the entire hotel. And the hotel is owned by the Holy Spirit Association for the Unification of World Christianity Church, founded in South Korea by Reverend Sun Young Moon. They didn't respond.
They say, truth is stranger than fiction.
I guess. They evicted him in 2024, and he got a 6-month prison sentence. But you see, that's 6 months of free housing. And I don't know. He may try with that. He said, I never intended to commit any fraud. I don't believe I committed any fraud. Okay, so he's crazy. So yeah, fine story. Absolutely fine.
Okay, you take care.
All right,
care.
Thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate it, James. All right,
okay,
call again soon. Care. Thanks, appreciate it. So, that was a fine story all the way around. Yeah, why don't I just put a deed in for that? All right, well, or not. Let's see, Maddie in Harwood Heights is closing the show. He's got 20 seconds.
My gosh.
All right, go for it. 20 seconds, Maddie.
Oh, my gosh. I just wanted to say hello. My wife is in the shower. I wish we were able to do the trivia last night because we were killing it, but... What are you going to do?
I don't know.
I'll catch you again.
I hope so. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Now, tomorrow night will be about a half hour late. There's sports of some sort. And after some sort, play-by-play, we will be on. I figure you'll lose about a half hour of me, which, you know, might be fine. But other than that, until then, 21 and a half hours from now, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Best of all, I thank you for calling. That's what makes the show a pleasure to do. We'll do it again on tomorrow night on WGN Radio.
Curses of the Gambinos, plus Phantom of Zeros and Jesters Join Jesus. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News, real stories, real fun. Pow Chicken, scenes from an Italian commandant at a swanky Asian dinner joint in Midtown Manhattan as a couple of Gambino goons went full restaurant on some poor patron. The pair personally presented a punishing portion of off-menu man-feared rage infusion, calling him a yellow belly sashimi for ratting out the racket the punks and their pals pleaded guilty to. The mobster tails flipped over the table and smashed a bottle across the federal witness's puss, the wanton swoop adding on to the hard time the dummy duo's already doing for other deeds. Sickerscape charades. Vichy greasy underfoot in Lower Manhattan, where two Nazi-loving stooges, who turned World War II France into a criminal collaborationist cabal, still honored with sidewalk plaques marking the ticker tape parades New York held for them in the 1930s, plans to restore one damaged marker honoring Hitler-worshipping French Prime Minister Pierre Laval, prompting some outrage. But the other plaque commemorating his boss Marshal Pétain, who led the puppet regime that eagerly deported 80,000 Jews to the camps, remains along the Canyon of Heroes. Clowns crash church. East London's got holy hilarity as a bozo congregation packs a community church for the annual Grimaldi clown service. Big shoes, bigger shtick. Between bubbles, balloon poodles, and buttonhole squirters, the church aisles turn into a sanctuary sideshow, yet it's still a solemn send-off for the king of clowns. It's free, it's frenzied, and if you're hungover, repent, regret, and repeat. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.